Well, hi, everyone. We're back together for another campfire conversation. And it's Sam and John and I joining you. And we have sent you a kind of diagram. We were, John and Sam and I, and actually Bob Allums, we have been talking over the last few days by email, just with ideas, things. And actually, Sam started, as usual. He usually is the starter of these things. And he sent something, a few things that he had read during a quiet time that were hitting him, and he was linking certain things together. And, you know, before you know it, we were all kind of linking other things in that we were thinking or we have read, and it was, you know, it was one of those really good, stimulating times. And we could do it by email. I mean, that's the remarkable thing, that the heart can communicate through all different means, you know, if we'll present it. And so this was kind of a fun conversation. And part of what came out of this were the quotes, this part of it, that I sent you as we were trying to link some things together and wondering, so what does God seem to be saying to us? Now, we want to bring the us, we want it to you. We want to bring you into the us. Again, it happened to be Sam and John and I and Bob Allums, but we really want to bring you into this as we think through this, because there seems to be a theme. I think this theme has been true in our campfire conversations lately. And I think even going back to base camps, listening to the conversations that were happening there. So we kind of want to go where God's going and try to understand it and uncover it. So we are starting this conversation with those three quotes that we gave you, two from Chambers and one from this Alicia Britt Cole. And that, again, I know you're all familiar with Chambers, but the middle quote from Alicia is from a book called, I don't have it in front of me. It's called Anonymous. And I think it's the subtitle is The Hidden Ears, Jesus' Hidden Ears and Yours. And this was a book that Vern recommended. And I could actually understand a book that Vern recommended. It was amazing. I want to recommend it to you all. It's really a good book. The premise of her book is, she said, you know, we only know of the last 3 years of Jesus' life. And we don't know about all the anonymous years. But we do know that those anonymous years of Jesus' life made him into the man that we saw him in the visible years. And that's very true of our own life. Anyway, I highly recommend this book. But it all started with, and I'm going to stop talking after this and let John and Sam jump in. And I really want your thoughts, everyone listening, and your stories, if this resonates with you, if it seems to be true of your current journey. But it really started, and I'll let Sam say more about this, it started with Sam kind of coming back to that quote that we use so often in the calling retreat and in different settings of Chambers, where he said, it cannot be stated definitely what the call of God is to, because his call is to be in comradeship with himself for his own purposes. And the test is to believe that God knows what he is after. And so, Sam, why don't you take it from there, kind of what was hitting you about that and how we got into this and where we're going.
Well, I think the thing that struck me, so I read another quote from Chambers Monday when this all came about, and the thing that struck me about that quote right there was the phrase that he says, just as I'm going to post it up there, where Chambers says his call is to be in comradeship for himself for his own purpose. For his own purposes. And it just struck me, because I think that, I know that in our calling retreats, and in Gary, your book, It's Your Call, we continue to say it's not just gifting, but it's also what God is doing in our heart, what he's doing in our character, how he's put on a cloak of righteousness, but inside, you know, I still get angry, I get bitter, I act unloving. And inside, God is making me more like the outside cloak that he's put over me. And so we talk about that in retreats, but one of the things that struck me is I think that what keeps coming back to me is the way God does it is my comradeship with him. He doesn't you know, you say this very clearly, Gary, in the book and the retreats, where you'll say, he doesn't just give us our calling and then leave it like that, because we'll just go run off and do it, and we'll do it without him. I mean, we will. I will. You will. John will. John probably not, but you and I will, Gary.
And that's true.
And there's some way that I think God has decided, and that's why we keep getting more clarity on our calling. God doesn't tell it all at once. It's mysterious, partly just to keep us in comradeship with him. And then I started thinking about that in connection with character. And, you know, in character, when I was in college, I was just part of this ministry that I went to a good college, and the ministry reached out to people who were highly academic, highly often great in sports. You know, they were disciplined, they were intellectual, they were hardworking. And so the college ministry I was a part of was disciplined, hardworking, evangelistic. Everybody took their prayer time. But it didn't always feel like it came out of comradeship with God. It felt like it came out of just sort of natural discipline. And so when somebody came along who wasn't that disciplined, one of these naturally disciplined people couldn't really help them. They couldn't say, let me tell you how God is, you know, God's patience has made me more disciplined, or God's courage. You know, they couldn't say, because they just were naturally. And so they tended to almost look down at people that didn't have their same self-discipline. And so again, I was coming back to, we can do things on our own in our calling. We can even try to do things in our own in our character, or I like your phrase for character, which is the strength of heart. But if we don't do it in the context of comradeship with God, we are lost. So that's what drove my initial email, from which we went 17 different directions, and every one of them was great.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, one of the things that struck me that you just mentioned, you had a phrase something like, I think you said, I'll really paraphrase it, that you can see a person and think they have, you know, maturity, great character development, but maybe predominantly what it is self-control.
Sure.
You know, that they don't lash out, they don't tell people what they're feeling, this kind of thing. But it's
a natural self-control, not a supernatural self-control.
Exactly. That in the heart of things, you know, there is still this rage, this jealousy, this envy, this whatever it is. And
fear,
I thought,
sometimes.
Gosh, that, pardon me?
Sometimes it's fear. You know, we look really patient.
Yes.
The truth is we're just scared.
Yeah. Right. And then this thought that how God is continually going after our character, he's, you know, as you said, Sam, in this, I think it was in your blog possibly, but somewhere in the emails, it was this idea that that God, he really does value, and this isn't quite the right term, holiness over giftedness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the image of his son in us over, you know, the works of his son in us, maybe to say it that way.
That's a good way to say
and
it.
And so yeah, he's going to keep going after our heart and force that stuff to the surface to say, no, I still have a work to do in you. You know, the life of my son is not a life of purely self-discipline, holding back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It kind of goes back to John 15 again, as we always do. That,
he, and we always should, John.
And I guess we should. But he's more after the fruit of himself in us than he is with the outward activities. Just to kind of put it succinctly, he's really for the fruit.
So, John, going down that lane, that alley, that road, we were talking about that in email, and Gary came up with, I don't remember what you said, Gary, so I'm prompting you. I'm teeing this ball up for you. You got to swing at it. But,
okay.
You know, I think part of the problem whenever we talk about fruit is there are seasons in my life where I just feel like nothing is happening. Either I'm not growing in holiness, you know, I'm actually getting more irritable, or I'm not growing in my gifting. It just doesn't seem like things are happening. And whatever, you know, there's seasons where whatever you touch seems to work, and then there's seasons where whatever you touch seems to fall apart. And Gary, you just had some really great thoughts about that, partly from this book you're reading.
Right. This and the book that I hope you all listening have also gotten at one point, and it's called Spiritual Rhythm by Mark Buchanan. And I have been visiting all of my highlights from reading his book. I typically now I read books on Kindle so that then I can get all the highlights. And it has really hit me. Just this idea of seasons, you know, that and he's very big on, you have to understand when you come into a winter season, you know, you can't make it become winter or make it become summer. You are in winter, and winter has certain characteristics, and you can't change that. And there are certain things you can do in winter and certain things you can't do. And you need to just own it and relax in it, you know. And you'll see a quote on the last thing that I sent out. I realize that on Basecamp and Secret Garden, it's a little hard to read the last kind of picture I put up of these quotes. But in the email, you can. And I read this last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago when we were together. But let me read this again by Mark Buchanan. He said, winter is when you submit to the vine dresser's pruning shears. Winter is not for adding things, but for cutting things. And, you know, in the book, let me just part from that for a second. In the book, he says, listen, you don't plant trees in the winter. You know, you save that for the spring. And you know, he just kind of goes through the things that are true of winter and what you can and can't do. Okay, back to the quote. He said, it's the best season, the safest one, actually, to look closely at all of the tangled branches of your life, the travel, the committee work, the various projects, the hobbies that have become burdens or obsessions, the trivial pursuits, the diversions, or the ingrown snarl of things, the list in your head of people and situations to worry about, the proliferation of responsibilities that aren't really yours. And ask honestly if these bear fruit or just are sapping energy. And then without apology or even caution, cut nothing that gives nothing, that has no fruit to it. And I was just thinking, gosh, there are these winter seasons I've had in my life, and it feels like, you know, there are no leaves on the tree. All the branches are exposed. Nothing can grow. It's not nice to be outside. It's cold. It feels brutal. You know, it's not welcoming and warm. And he was just saying, you know, this is a time when you just kind of stay indoors with God, you know. You don't worry about the fruit at this point. You look at the branches. You look at the trunk and the structures. And you look at those things. But fruit is not what you're concerned about in the winter, you know, rhythm of your life. So
Gary, the first thing, and tell me what you think, but two things jump out at me from what you're saying. First, it's obvious, but I just want to say it. The guy's saying it's okay that we're in different seasons. You know?
Right.
And of course, Psalm 1, you know, the very first Psalm says, blessed is the person, but it says it's a tree that bears its fruit in its season. I mean, so scripture's saying you're not constantly going to be filled with apples. There's going to be times when their leaves are off the tree, and that's okay. I think that's a terrific relief. I mean, it actually gives me hope when you say that. And when, you know, you're quoting this other guy, but just to say that it's perfectly fine that there's different seasons, just that alone just gives me hope. I'm willing to wait.
Right. I was going to say with that, the other quote I put up there by this Alicia I thought was so good when she said, the Father's work in us does not sleep, though in spiritual winters he retracts all advertisements. You know, the advertisements of you're good at this and you're good at that and this is, you know, but just that he's at work in the winter. When it feels like nothing's at work at the winter, he is. So go ahead.
Well, so I honestly, I feel like I could just spend the whole rest of the conversation saying it's just okay that there's different seasons. It just is a tremendous release, relief and release for me. But the second thing I liked about what you said with the quote, and Alicia says it's here somewhat too, and that is, and you do different things in different seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're in a season of winter, what are the things that we do that are different than, I mean, just the idea that in winter you do different things. I mean, in the winter you sit more. You know, my father-in-law was a farmer till he passed away, and he had a really busy spring and a really busy fall. And then for the first 2 months of winter, for December and January, he literally just sat and recovered from his, you know, he would have 20-hour days for weeks on end as he's harvesting. Then he would take January, at least all of December off, usually part of January. Then he spent time just repairing all his equipment, you know, to get ready.
Yeah.
But he had different seasons, and I just never thought about it in terms of our own personal life. And your quote was hinting at what are some of the things we do in the winters of our life.
Right.
So expand
right.
on that again, because just remind me, what, because I feel like I'm in a winter right now, so tell me what to do.
Yeah. Seriously, did you all hear that Sam's asking me to tell him what to do? Yeah, I'm not going to take advantage of that. Anyway, well, you know, I mean, I'm with you. I kind of feel like that, too. It's that feeling like, you know, whatever you're trying to do is not becoming fruitful right now, but it doesn't feel like, yeah, it doesn't feel like it's the consequence of sin or anything like that. So, you know, and Buchanan says in his book, you know, in winter, it's you sit indoors, you read, you rest, you contemplate. It's slower, it's quieter, because the spring and the summer is coming, so it's allowing you to prepare for that. And I remember hearing years ago someone said, when God gives you that kind of sabbatical season in your life, that rest season where you can't make anything happen, they said, then you better rest, because there's going to be a point where you're going to need the strength that you were supposed to have received through that rest period. And I thought, I think that's how you live, with believing that what God is up to is good, right? So he's forcing you to rest right now. I mean, I love the fact that you talked about how your grandfather rested, he repaired equipment, right? It was kind of the infrastructure of farming. And I think there's kind of an infrastructure of the heart.
Yeah. Repairing things,
you know,
in the heart.
Right.
Or rebuilding
and
strengthening or nourishing, yeah.
Right, right. And Buchanan says, you know, the same thing. He goes, when the spring comes, he said, you need to be planting a lot of ideas. Just you plant all these things that God gives you. And in the summer, you know, you're finding the few you need to stay with. And in the spring, you better be harvesting. So, but it's the accepting of winter, right?
So Marco on Basecamp said, I also relate to being in a season of winter, but I've been trying to fight my way out of it. And I think that's exactly what I've been trying to do. That's what,
yeah.
Again, I love your quotes.
Right.
It's great to hear that winter is part of God's plan.
So getting down to some specifics, what specific things would you recommend to Marco or to any of us for us to do during the season of winter?
Well, you know, John, I mean, this is something, you know, so just to tell everyone, this is something that you and I and Sam are doing next week, getting together. And we're, you know, part of our time is, you know, besides time on the Noble Heart, our primary time, our initial time is over each other. We all want that. And,
yeah.
You know, if you guys, after hearing me and seeing, you know, and hearing my heart, seeing my heart, and you just say, yeah, I really think God has you in a winter season, I kind of need to hear that. Or you may come back and say, I don't know that God has you in a winter season as much as there's something else that's going on. You know, Maybe Gary, you are more in the spring and you should be planting, or, you know, but I'm, so I think one, we need others to read into our life to say, gosh, it does seem like this. It does seem like that's what God is up to right now in your life, or not, or you're misinterpreting this, or something else is happening. And then the other thing I would throw out is that, well, okay, if this is a time of rest and somewhat isolation, not isolated from friendships, but this is all you have is your own heart right now, then what would it look like to work on that? And what would you perceive I should be looking at, working on? That, You know, that's what I think.
Let me add one more thing to that, Gary. Some of the men and women out there know that in our, what I call our calling advance, what Gary calls it's your time, and since it's Gary's retreat, I suppose that's the right term. But anyway, one of the things we do is we help each person on the retreat write a calling manifesto. It's like a vision statement about what your calling is.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if in these winter times it isn't a good idea to sit down and try to articulate again what has God taught me over the last year, or, you know, whatever the last season has been. You know, it doesn't always have to be a calendar year. But what has God taught me, and what is God asking me to add to my life, invest more in, and what is God asking me to get rid of? I mean, your quote was talking about detangling things and unashamedly getting rid of things, but I wonder if it isn't just a good time to say, what am I going to invest more in? You know, one of the things my father-in-law did, I'm sure, he never told me, but, you know, he probably sat down and tried to say, okay, what crops am I going to plant in the different fields? Because, you know, he rotated them, and he didn't always rotate them exactly the same way. So he thought about it, and he read all the magazines and everything. And so there was a certain way he's thinking in the winter, what am I going to invest in come springtime when it starts to plant, when it's planting time? And I wonder,
yeah,
for us, if this just isn't a good time in our season of winter to rearticulate what do I think is God's calling for me? In fact, the three of us are going to do that next week. We're going to sit down and again rearticulate what do we think God is calling us to. And, you know, we're going to help each other. We're going to refine it for each other. But I think when we have a calling manifesto or a vision statement or whatever we want to call it, it does help create a map, a guideline to sort of say, I'm gonna quit emphasizing this. I'm gonna quit investing here, but I'm gonna invest more over there.
Yes.
So it's
just one more thing
to do.
Yep. I think it's the ideal time to sit and relook at it and say, is this really true? You know, now that I can't do it, does my heart still resonate with it versus, you know, I don't know. I kind of like the action of it. I kind of like possibly any affirmation I'm getting. Or, right.
Yeah, I like the question of where is my heart in this right now? Because there are seasons we go through where God has given us an assignment that really matches where our heart is at the time. But then after a while, that particular assignment is no longer for us. And I think one of his clues to us is your heart just isn't in it like it used to be. And, you know, it's not that you've lost heart, it's just that it's time for a change. I know I've been through that, and there were seasons where I was doing things I absolutely loved. I look back on those times now, and I can say without a doubt, I don't really miss it. And it's just such a contrast. And yet my heart is in a really good place, and my heart is yearning for other things. Those things, their time is done.
They just don't have the same appeal.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a huge issue that you guys brought up, a huge factor of this kind of winter season. You know, another thing, let me just read another thing that comes out of that book, Spiritual Rhythm, and he said, you know the scripture where Jesus curses the fig tree because it has no figs. And he said, you know, Jesus cursed a fig tree that was thick with leaf but absent fruit. In the end, the absence of leafiness means nothing. It's by our fruit that we're known. And he said, apply it this way. Can we get spiritually busy during summer in ways that make us feel productive? Look at all those leaves, we say, but make sure there's something else growing beneath the busyness. And if you must, sacrifice some of the leaves for greater fruit. And he was kind of talking about this busyness that we have in our life. It's all the leaves that we see. It looks just full and healthy. But, you know, he said, it doesn't mean there's fruit on it, like Jesus with this one tree was looking at and say, but there's no figs. The tree is now producing what I've created to produce. And And I thought, that's the amazing thing about winter is, you know, the winter season of our heart, all the busyness,
all the leaves
kind of falls
gone.
Off. All the leaves are gone. Now it's time to look at the actual structure of a tree and say, this is not healthy, or something has changed. You know, I just think that's really important.
So I had been saying, look at my calling statements, you know, look at my calling manifesto and refine it. But I like what you're saying about the leaves versus the fruit, meaning it's also a time to examine my life and say, am I just busy? Am I just busy doing Christian things without what God really wants? And of course, some of that means, I think for me, I mean, the way I heard that when you read it was, how is God calling me to grow in the normal fruit of the Spirit, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control? And I wonder if it isn't a time just to say, what has God been speaking to me? Because for me, I would say the thing that God keeps saying to me is learn to wait on Him, which I think is a fruit of the Spirit, because that does not come naturally to me. And yet, I just continue to feel like God's saying, wait on Him. Now, I think waiting on Him is part of the season of winter. You know, in winter, you just wait. The plant, the crops have all been taken in. But I think I feel like God is saying to me there's an active waiting versus a passive waiting. It's not just sitting on the couch waiting. But there's some way that God wants me to be able to act without trusting in anything I act, to be able to do something without trusting what I do, but to wait for God to bring His fruit in. I don't know how to articulate it, but I mean, just as I think it's helpful to talk about what our calling gifting is, just, you know, at the Noble Heart, we keep saying part of our calling is to grow Christ-like. Part of our calling is to grow in the fruit of the Spirit. Not part. Everything else rests on that, you know?
Right.
And so, I immediately jumped to calling when I should be jumping to character, but, you know.
Well, I mean, what you just said is that verse we have in this, you know, Galatians 6:9, right? And let us not lose heart and grow weary. So don't lose heart in this time and grow weary and faint in acting nobly and doing right, for in due time, at the appropriate season, we shall reap, which means, right, that we're in this time of we're not seeing a lot of fruit, things don't seem to be moving, growing, that kind of thing. And he says, now just don't lose heart, because at the right time, at the appointed season, you will reap. So it's that you just kind of hang on. And I have to keep saying to myself, okay, so if it feels like I'm in winter and it feels like not a lot is happening, I look out, I kind of try to push in each direction and nothing, there's no movement. You know, I just need to make sure that I'm just not doing anything. I'm resigned.
Right.
And not doing anything, wondering why there's no fruit versus no, I feel like my heart is engaged with God. But evidently this is not the season for fruitfulness right now. And I think we really need friends to help us with that, too, to help us see what the truth of that is for us.
Because we're always blind to ourselves.
Right. Yeah. So I think, you know, John, you really, that is the key question you asked. So what do we do if we're in a winter season? And the one thing I like that Buchanan does is he said, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, your lifespan from birth to death, and you make it out into, you know, spring, summer, fall, winter.
Right.
But he said, I'm talking about we go through these cycles of seasons just like we experience in our lifetime in this world, you know, on this earth. So we all go through these winter seasons, but I think to encourage each other to really look at it and say, is this winter Or are you just is it summer and you're staying indoors?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going on there? And if this is winter, help us try to understand how do we live well in that winter season, knowing spring is coming as preparing us. And you know, as number of guys have said here on the chat line, I think that winter season is God's probably most passionate appeal to come to pursue him, as Jim said, and to be with him, taking everything else away and saying, no, it's really just our time right now. Let's put that project away for a bit. It's you and me now,
mm-hmm.
you know.
That's what I really like about Mark Buchanan's quote. It's kind of like when Sam said he got a lot of freedom from knowing he's in winter. For me, the very last line of Mark Buchanan's quote gives me a lot of freedom. He says, during that winter season, and after you've thought through and analyzed the things that are really distractions in your life, he says, then without apology or even caution, cut to nothing all that which gives nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have found very difficult to do over my life because it's so hard to cut out activities that are good activities because I'm thinking, well, I'm slacking off. You know, I really should stay faithful here. I'm just not being obedient or something like that. And yet, if you've really lost heart with it, if it just isn't bringing life either in you or the people around you, it's time to just, without apology, just cut it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, one caveat in all this is, this is why it takes comradeship with God. I think that there are things in my life that if I had examined after only 2 years or 3 years, I might have said it's not bearing fruit. And sometimes God says, no, it takes 6 or 7 years. So I mean, I think that
mm-hmm.
it takes comradeship with God and it takes comradeship with friends who look into our lives and say, it's not time to cut that yet. Just as
yeah.
it's comradeship with guys who say, yes, it is time to cut that. You know, I
right.
know that you really like that. I know you're invested in that, but I don't think that's, you know, there's just no easy formulas. It continues to take hearing God, listening to God, praying to God, appealing to God, but then be willing to cut it. Be willing to say,
mm-hmm.
that was a season, that was a time in my life, and that season is over.
Yeah. Right. Right. And you know, I had written on the last kind of iteration of the chart that I just sent out before, I had written two questions that, as I thought about this, and I thought kind of the so what question, I thought, well, you know, do I believe that God knows what he is after in my
yeah,
circumstances?
Exactly.
You know, can I look at this and go, God's up to something. He knows what he can get out of this and why he's allowing this or orchestrating it. And then I thought, but then see, my real question really gets to, well, is it good? Really? And how much is it going to hurt or how much is it going to cost me? Because I think that's what really scares me more than anything. I think I believe that what God has planned and what he's doing in my life is good, but I really do think what I fear is, well, how good is it and what is it going to cost me exactly? You know, the sanctification
true
he wants to do
pain.
In my life. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where I wrestle the most.
I think, I mean, one of the reasons I loved the quote you were talking about with all the seasons and it's fine is the final phrase of the original Oswald Chambers quote, which is, the test is to believe God knows what he's after. And if we really believe that God has something good for us, I mean, and, you know, isn't that always the question? Isn't
right.
there always this lurking fear that God is just a taskmaster or he's holding out on us? I mean, that was the very original sin. Satan says, God's holding something back from you. Now, you could be more, but God's holding it back from you. And I just think that's constantly the thing that God is training us in is that God really does know what he's after, and it's always good, and it's always better than we expect.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not always there. I can say it a lot better than I believe it. I mean, I do believe
right.
it. I believe it in a general
sense. You can say it a lot is better than you can live it, maybe. Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
isn't part of what God about to actually make that real in our hearts? His goodness,
right.
His love, His care, His affection, His...
Right. Well, and you know what? I mean, that's what I love about the other quote that we put in the chart by Chambers. And I'm very inspired by this idea where he says, am I prepared to let God grip me by his power and do a work in me that is worthy of himself? That stirs my heart. I want him to do a work in me that's worthy of him.
Yeah.
You know, worthy of me? Well, okay. That doesn't do much for me, but I think, man, it's worthy of him. That's a big deal, right? That's glorious. I want him to do that thing, you know. So, yeah. Yeah.
That's good, Gary.
Yeah. And I love what Billy Ray Norris put up where he says, Paul Miller says you can have a busy life but not a busy heart. And I thought, that's, you know, that's true. It's the heart's always the issue. Now, I think eventually, you know, I think eventually that a busy life betrays what's actually going on in the heart. You know, I think we can say to somebody, why are you so busy anyway? Why are you living a lifestyle you really don't want? And that goes back to something in our heart we're trying to accomplish, you know.
Right.
John, any kind of final thoughts on all this for you?
This
I'll let him
been
think
really
about
good.
It.
I mean, there's been some really good stuff here, and I think for me, it's just zeroing in on where I am right now, and God just calling me more and more into comradeship with Himself. And I'll just throw this out. Just before we started, I thought, what does that word comradeship mean? And basically the definition is a person who shares in the activities of his friend. And I just think that's a good picture. God is inviting us to walk with him and to do the things, be engaged in the things that he's up to. And he wants to share that with us. He wants to live out his life through us doing those things, but it's more about just walking with us in friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, John, one of the things
yeah.
that makes me laugh about your comment is the very thing that triggered my email to all of you guys was yesterday's My Utmost, where Chambers says, we must make a deliberate determination to be interested only in what God is interested in, which is sort of your idea of comradeship, is taking an interest in his interests. Anyway, just that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think as we were talking, one of the things that struck me is that the three of us have this great bond where I can be in the middle of my prayer time, read that quote that I just posted. You know, so I was in the middle of my prayer time. I send an email to John and Gary and say, look at this quote. We must make a deliberate determination to be interested only in what God is interested in. And it stirred me. I could share it with you guys. And I don't know, we had 10 emails that went back, 12 emails that went back and forth of people adding to it and commenting. One of the things I want to say to everybody is we need the kind of friendship where we can just do that. We can email a friend or phone a friend of just some spiritual truth that struck us, knowing that they're going to say, oh my gosh, that struck me too. And here's what it said. I mean, this whole discussion tonight came out of Gary, John, and I just getting excited because one of us sent something, but then everybody else had something to say. And I almost wonder if in this winter it's a time to build friendships with other believers who want to get excited just about spiritual truths. And we can email them, and they get just as excited as if it was their own idea.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with tonight's topic, and yet it stirs me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and again, I met with different guys this past last week, I think four or five different appointments, which I typically don't have. And most of these guys are, well, they're local, obviously. And you know what? In every one of them, as we talked about different things, one of the things that came up was they feel completely isolated. And I don't think so much that they're saying, I have been isolated, as much as they're saying, I don't have any close friends. And every one of them is just starving to pursue God with someone else in their life. Now, let me just throw out this caveat. I think all of these guys are married, and they do have their spouse, but they don't. These guys that I'm talking to don't have another man in their life that they can kind of talk from a masculine heart to a masculine heart with those uniquenesses about their pursuit of God. And they're trying to understand him, and they're trying to, you know, walk out of belief, that kind of thing, in their belief. And so I just think, Sam and John, that is so common. And that's why even an email exchange can feel significant when you can tell guys are just kind of speaking from their heart. Oh, I saw this. I wonder how's, wow, that really hits me. And I'm, you know, and that's just email.
Right.
So it's so essential. Absolutely. Well, good, you guys. This has been a good conversation. I love what I'm seeing on here. The comments that are going on, the conversations. I mean, in many ways, and you guys who have been to the gathering know, this is kind of the kind of stuff we do at the Basecamp gathering, the kind of conversations we have around the table or the things that are presented in the formal gathering times and then talked about in the informal gathering times. So, this is the life that we all want to have together, all of us. So. Well, thank you, John and Sam, and everyone that's on here. Thank you. This has been a good time again, as usual, being together. So thank you so much.
Great conversation, Gary. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. We will see you. Let me just think about this. Yep. We'll see you next week. I think that works. So
yep.
See you next Tuesday night. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.